God's Revolution, a series in 12 parts by Don Taylor, with Bernard Hepton as Cromwell and Nigel Anthony as Fairfax. Part 3, Insurrection. Captain Francis White was to be court-martialed for supporting his soldiers in their petition to Parliament. But his senior officers did not arrive to make the case against him, and Cromwell ordered that the charges be dismissed and that the captain retain his rank. To his horror, Captain White then learns that his regiment is being sent to Chelmsford to be disbanded. Insurrection.
King's Arms in Chelmsford, soldier?
No, Captain White, this is the only one.
Is Captain Audley lodging here?
Yes, sir, he's inside with some of the troopers.
What, a meeting?
Well, I don't know if you call it that, sir. With no officers hardly, we don't know where we are.
Get my horse, sir, too.
I can't do that, sir, I'm standing guard.
No time to stand on ceremony, soldier. You, ostler, come over here. You see that he does the job properly. That horse has been ridden hard.
Yes, sir.
Where are they?
In the big room to the right, sir. Anyway, you're
Francis, how do you come to be here? What's happened?
The case against me collapsed. Jackson and Gooday weren't there. And Musket lost his head.
Oh, where are they?
Who? Jackson and Gooday. They left Saffron Walden first thing this morning. Musket rode after them as soon as the court was dismissed. Are they not here?
We've not seen hide nor hair of them, Captain.
What about the other officers? Bland, Highfield and the rest?
Oh, they're here, but keeping themselves to themselves.
We've never seen them.
There's no command in the regiment at all, sir. I'm meeting here with Yeoman and Vaughan and these others to try to decide what we should do.
I'll tell you what you must do. Jackson and Gooday have betrayed you.
What?
Parliament has issued secret orders to disband.
Yes, disband.
The day after tomorrow. The commissioners are on the way down with a pittance to pay us off. Oh. That's why they moved us away from the rest of the army. The plan is to disperse the regiments and disband them one by one. The Council of Agitators met at once.
Council of Agitators? What's that?
They instructed me to tell you not to disband under any circumstances, whatever your officers say, but to march at once to Newmarket.
Why Newmarket?
They're planning a rendezvous of the whole army there.
Is this council in command, though, then? Where are the officers? Yes,
there's more than one regiment's dismissed their officers, and at least one I know of has already marched. Fairfax is still in London. Cromwell and Arton rode back down as soon as the news broke, leaving Skip and spinning round like a top. So we agreed that all power should go to the Council of Agitators. They're meeting every day.
But where have Jackson and Gooday gone? What are they up to?
I expected them to be here. Since they're not, we must be the only effective officers left.
What should we do?
What the Council ordered us to do. Private Yeoman.
Sir.
Go down to the guard. Tell him to call out the drummer and beat assembly.
Yes, sir.
And what then?
We'll call out the regiment, take the colours, and prepare to march at first light tomorrow.
But Francis, do...
There's no stopping it now, Lewis. And if you'd seen what was happening in Saffron this morning, you'd know it. It's like a great movement of the earth under our feet. Quite suddenly, the men have had enough. If their officers won't go with them, they'll go alone.
But some of the officers are with them.
Oh, yes, the majority.
That's a relief. Who are they, this council of agitators?
Sexby, two Thompson brothers, Lockyer Church, all the best men.
There's the drum.
Oh, I need something to eat and drink before I say another word. I've ridden like a maniac. I thought Musket and the others would be here before me. It's a mystery where they can be.
Landlord, a pan some beer for Captain White.
Sometimes I think I'm not John Church at all, Bet, or that I'm living in a dream. Or that events have been in some way speeded up so that twice as much happens in a single day as in normal times. I've been elected one of the agitators for my regiment, with James Thompson the other, and I was taken along with him to meet the whole council. Sexby, though only a trooper, seems to be the leader, and there's already a good deal of organisation, with letters being sent, some of them in code, to all parts of the kingdom, and regular contact with Lilburn and other leaders of the Levellers in London. We meet at the Sun Inn, just a side street away from St. Mary's Church, which is big enough for a cathedral and stands on a hill in the middle of the town. There's so much coming and going at the Sun, so many urgent discussions, you'd think it was the Parliament House, Not just an inn in the centre of a country town.
What we got to understand is that to organise anything needs money, and we shall have to ask the soldiers to contribute, say, what, fourpence from each man to begin with.
Yeah, if we make it our responsibility to collect fourpence from each man in our own
regiment... just a minute, Brother Jim. What about the Northern Army in Yorkshire? We must make sure we have them on our side before the Parliament can get at them.
And that's not the only thing either.
Wait a minute. If we all speak at once, nothing will get done. We must collect the money we need. We must send a letter into Yorkshire. But what worries me more than both those things is the King.
He's still at Aldenby, as far as we know.
Yes, with Graves in command.
And if the Parliament can get the King in their hands...
He's already in their hands.
In theory he is, but Northampton is a long way from London.
What do you mean? They could raise a new army to march against us?
They could certainly do that. There's enough Royalists and ex-Parliament soldiers from Essex and Waller's old armies in London to raise a force at least as big as ours, and if it were backed by Parliament and the King himself were at the head of it...
Then they could present us as rebels.
That's right. Or they could call in the Scotch army again. They'd be happy enough to fight for the King if it meant a Presbyterian kirk at the end of it.
They're good soldiers, the Scots. Tough boys, right. Well-disciplined. I fought with them at Marston Moor, and I was glad they were on our side, not theirs.
So what do we do? If what you say is true, we could be at war again in a few weeks.
That means we must assume it is true, and to prepare for the possibility.
May the Lord have mercy upon us.
I think we should do two things. All the artillery train is at Oxford still, guarded by Colonel Rainsborough. He is the very best among the officers, but he hasn't got very many men with him. So first, we send to Oxford to secure those guns.
Get the guard changed at Aldenby.
That's right. Take a party of picked men to Northampton and take over the responsibility for the King from Graves.
He won't give it up willingly. Not without a parliamentary commission.
How many men with him there, Cornet Thompson?
Oh, about 200, I should think, when we left.
Ah, Jim, more like 250. Some of our lads, some of Rossiter's regiment.
So we send 500. And be prepared to fight if we have to.
That's right, yes.
Fight our own brothers.
But to prevent another war, John, I'd fight you or Jim or any man here.
Well, who'll be in command? It must be someone we can trust.
More than that, it must be someone from this council. Someone who stands a good chance of being hanged if it doesn't go our way.
If it doesn't go our way... We'll have done enough to be hanged twice over.
I'll do it. What? Cornet George Joyce, Cromwell's horse.
Joyce? I can vouch for Cornet Joyce. Our troop has elected him along with me. And they couldn't have chosen a better man. All in favour say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Well, thank you, brothers. I shall need 500 good men to ride with me.
Volunteers.
Some volunteers, some picked men.
Oh, God!
Oh, Lord!
And me too.
You three are my lieutenants, then. We'll put our heads together and see who we can trust if it comes to a fight.
A gentleman to see you, sir, with a message for the council.
Who is it?
Trooper Lockyer, sir.
Oh, send him in at once.
Edmund!
Come in, Robert. What is it?
Fairfax is back with the army.
What? He's called an officers' meeting tomorrow, not here, at the church at Barry St. Edmund's. Hardly arrived half an hour ago.
That makes sense. Half the regiments are nearer there than here by now.
Is Cromwell with him?
No, he's still in London, as far as we know. But there's a rumour that Parliament has sacked him and that he's no longer Lieutenant General.
Well, anything's possible with those madmen. But I'll believe it when I see it. They won't get rid of old Big Nose as easy as that.
Fairfax will find a different army from the one he left. But are we going to leave it all to the officers?
No, we are not, Bill Thompson. Those days are over. Officers or not, the Council of Agitators will be there.
Lord General, Lieutenant Colonel Jackson, and Major Gooday to see you.
Come in, gentlemen.
Good morning, Lord General. We thought we should report you at the earliest possible moment after your return.
Gentlemen, what in the name of all the... blessed heavens are you doing at Barry St. Edmund?
You called a meeting, sir.
Where is my regiment?
It should be at Chelmsford, sir.
But it could be anywhere. Why aren't you with them, sir? You're supposed to be in command.
If I may explain, sir, as soon as we heard the Parliament order to disband, knowing the temper of the men, we thought we ought to consult with the commissioners at once.
So we rode to Romford to meet them. Leaving the regiment wholly without commanders. Who is with them, do you know?
Captains Bland and Highfield, Lord General.
Regiments afoot are not commanded by captains in any army I ever heard of, sir. Not to mention the fact that White and Audley are there too, and from what I know of my officers, they would have seen Bland and Highfield off like a couple of stray dogs by now. Do you have any idea what is happening here?
Yes, of course.
Regiment after regiment are turning out their officers and they don't support the soldiers' petition.
The cavalry, sir. But I haven't heard that it's happening to the foot.
It is now, Colonel Jackson. You may be sure of that. Having left them to their own devices or the mercy of Captains White and Audley, you can expect no less. What now, then? Have you resigned your commands?
No, sir. We intended to ride to Chelmsford as soon as your meeting was concluded, to conduct the commissioners into camp and disband the regiment. If you would rather, we rode to Chelmsford.
It's a long ride for an empty stable. I'll stay here. If this meeting is at all as I expect it to be, I shall need all the support I can get. Penelope?
Yes, Father?
Come into my study.
Now, Father, I'm just discussing the housekeeping with Martha.
Yes, now.
Very well. We'll carry on in a moment, Martha.
Yes.
I'm sure what you have to say is very important, Father. But we are running short of beer. And if your partiality for fresh beef is to be satisfied...
Do you think Martha can't run this house perfectly well on her own? Or the whole of Nunstow come to that? She has done for the best part of 20 years.
Well, Father, I like to pretend I'm of some use to you.
I don't need you to make the beer or order the beef. Sit down.
I sometimes wonder what you do need me for.
Because you are my daughter. Because you help to make life comfortable and pleasant, insofar as it can be. And because you are an intelligent and learned woman, a rare thing in all conscience, a diamond to be valued and cherished for its own sake.
I am honoured. However, whether the diamond appreciates its value in cherishing is a question to which philosophers offer no answer, I believe.
Are you content?
Content?
I don't mean happy. No wise man is happy unless he is too much of a blockhead to notice his own pain. No woman either, I presume. Are you content here?
I've lived here all my life.
I didn't ask you where you have lived. Everything you needed I have brought here. Tutors, dressmakers, music masters. I'm not a rich man, but I have educated you far beyond most men, including your brothers, and attended to all your needs.
I hope I have been suitably grateful.
All, except once, perhaps. What's the furthest you have been from here? Cambridge to see Francis?
Yes. And to Saffron Walden and Bury. And Chelmsford.
I shall move up to London at the end of next week.
What?
You will come with me. We shall have only one servant, so that the supervision of my house will be entirely your concern.
London?
I have acquired a house overlooking St. Paul's Churchyard. We shall be right among the bookshops where we both belong. I shall be better suited there, and so will you.
I? In what way?
You are intelligent and educated, ridiculously so for a woman, but it occurs to me that you know nothing. I have been to blame. I have a great contempt for what is called the world. A sensible man is self-sufficient. Nevertheless, a wise man, or woman for that matter, must know something of it, as I knew it in my youth, if only to find out for himself how worthless it is. We are a decent enough family and will be acceptable in all but the greatest houses. It's time you saw something of how the world lives, or you will never come to despise it. May even through ignorance find it attractive. London, even in times like these, is the forum where all the vanities come to display themselves. And, to speak fairly, some few virtues, too. We shall move there next week. Mun will look after Nunstow, as he already does, to all intents. He needs a wife. Some fat-rumped wench with legs like tree trunks, suitable for a farmer. You tell him so, he won't listen to me.
Yes. I see now.
What do you see?
This is to do with Captain Reynolds.
No, child. If it is to do with anything, it is to do with mortality. If study could keep a man alive, I should like to live forever. But it can't, and I won't. I am over 60. You must be provided for.
I think the cattle market would be cheaper.
What? Come back here. I haven't finished.
Yes, you have, Father. You have shown me the bare bones of the matter. Why dress them up any further?
You will come to thank me when you have a better understanding than you have now. Get your books and your necessaries together. I have already bespoken a coach.
Have you bespoken a guard, too? According to Francis, we'll need one.
Has he written to you? What has he said?
Political matters, Father, that's all. More than a week ago.
Let me see.
Angry officers and endless meetings. You need fear no assignations with Captain Reynolds, Father. He hasn't the time for such frivolity.
Mistress Cromwell.
Come in, Captain Reynolds. Come in, you are in a lather.
It is the Lieutenant General at home.
Oh, I should hope he is at this time of night. You look like an old horse that's been galloped all day.
Yes, I feel just that way, ma'am. I must see him.
So must I, Captain, but these days I hardly get the chance. I thought this was a gentleman's house in Drury Lane, but it's been more like the Parliament House itself this last week. What with all the comings and the goings?
Ma'am, I must ask you if I may see the...
Oliver is in his private cabinet with our son-in-law.
Oh, General Ireton's here, too.
Yes. Colonel Fleetwood and Colonel Wally have just left, and Captain Hugh Peterman here this afternoon, too. Though not for a prayer meeting, I dare say.
If you would be good enough to take me to him, Mama,
I should be sent out for some more small beer and bread and butter. So, if you carry the bread and the knife and the box, there you are. I'll bring the jug and the clean tankards.
Certainly, Mama.
We keep servants for such things, but I sent them to bed long ago.
Ah, my dear wife. Sustaining us with your own hands.
Captain Reynolds is here, Oliver, sweating like a racehorse.
I hope not, sir.
Now, son Henry, husband, do you ever intend to sleep today? Or shall I take myself off without you?
We may be some time yet, my dear. I shall go to bed.
Oh, good night, then. And God's blessing on all Christian men and women.
Amen. Well, Captain, I imagine you wouldn't call at my house after midnight without very good cause.
The best, sir. I spent the whole day, as you commanded me, trying to follow up what Hollins and his faction intend to do about the King.
And?
Well, sir, I made a list of 7 or 8 Presbyterian MPs I thought might be leaky on this business.
Leaky? The whole house is like a sieve. I've never known so many people who can't keep their mouths shut.
Excuse me, Commissary Ireton, not on this matter. 3 of them brushed me gruffly aside without a civil word. 1 I persuaded to take dinner with me at 2 o'clock, but he didn't come. So I spent the whole afternoon trying to get to another.
Who?
Forgive me, Lieutenant General, I am sworn to secrecy, and if I betray the confidence, that source of information will be dry in the future.
Well, I can probably guess. Carry on.
I eventually caught up with the man and arranged to take supper with him at 10 p.m. at the Swan. He arrived late and was so agitated he wouldn't stay. He insisted on dragging me away from an excellent supper and walking me up and down the riverside for nearly 2 hours.
Telling you what?
There is a plan brewing about the King.
We could have told you that. It's been obvious for weeks.
What plan?
It all came to a head this afternoon, which is why the fellow came to see me. He hadn't intended to come, but this afternoon decided
on. Oh, come on, get to the point!
I intend to send reinforcements to Colonel Graves and bring the King to London.
Exactly what I feel.
Oh, no, wait, there's more.
What?
Some of them are for taking him north instead, back to the Scots. Whether they do that or not, the main plank of the plan is to call the Scots back into England in the King's name.
So that they can set up a Presbyterian church by force.
Well, they all agree about the desirability of that. But there was apparently much shouting and anger about the question of bringing the Scots in. And it isn't cut and dried yet.
Which is why the fellow leaked to you.
It's certainly the way their thoughts are going. They realize it means another war, and some of them have no stomach for that.
Whereas others can't wait to get their swords at our throats. It's what we feared, all of us.
It's the very worst we fear.
We must stop them.
But how, Henry? How?
The King, at the moment, is as crucial as he is in a game of chess. Without him, the Scots won't invade. And without the Scots, the Parliament has no army worth the name.
They have the King already, and Graves is the most committed Presbyterian in the army. He won't surrender the King to anyone without direct orders from Hollis and Stapleton.
Then perhaps we should...
We can't, Henry! We can't! It would be the most naked treason. I'm a member of Parliament. I hold my commission from the Parliament, and so do you. Now, to take the regiment to Holdenby would be to smash a fist through every law and freedom we have fought a war for.
But it may come to that. What if they begin to do what Reynolds has said they're planning? Do we just sit here and watch our freedoms burn in front of our eyes like so much waste paper?
If that happens, Henry, we shall be watching from the windows of a prison and eventually from the scaffold. Captain Reynolds, how imminent is this action?
It's impossible to say, sir. There was much arguing and shouting this afternoon, if my whisperer is to be believed.
It only takes an hour to settle an argument.
I wish the Lord would make the path clearer for me.
If they make any move at all, we shall have to act.
How? Doing what? We're no longer even sure of the army. They listen to the agitators now, not Fairfax. Isn't that so, John?
Yes, sir, I believe it is.
I have been going to the house every day, and we must continue to do so. Compromise is the only hope for any of us. We must talk to every Presbyterian member we can find in both houses, and we must persuade them that there is another way beyond plunging the nation in blood over again. We may disagree on the most fundamental things concerning our very soul's salvation, but we must learn to disagree like friends, not enemies.
You have great faith in their reason, Oliver, or in your powers of persuasion.
Henry, there is no other choice. I will not lead an illegal insurrection against the Parliament I have fought for so many years. I will not do it. I shall wait upon the Lord. He will show me a way. No precipitate action, but much prayer. I shall wait upon the Lord.
I shall wait upon the Lord, too, and pray fervently that he doesn't keep us waiting till it's too late.
Can I be of any further assistance to you, gentlemen?
Yes, Captain Reynolds, you can. Get back to Sutton Walden as soon as you're able,
sir,
and keep me regularly informed of the state of affairs there.
I shall write tomorrow, sir. The Lord General is to meet the officers in council in the afternoon.
Will you get there in time?
If there is horse flesh in England to carry me, I shall be there.
Get some sleep first, Captain.
Thank you, sir. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
Good night, you.
Oh, Henry. Henry. What shall I do? When this black mood comes upon me, it's as though there were a wolf sitting on my shoulders, and I dare not look either to right or left, so that it seems impossible I should ever do anything again, or that the Lord will ever show me a clear way.
Well, father-in-law, you know that such moods pass. You've been in darker nights than this and seen the dawn.
Utter blackness, like pitch.
Inaction, too, may be a kind of temptation. There is no virtue in being the one racehorse left at the start.
Then at least I shall know which way to gallop. And if we lose, well, I know my course.
What?
I shall go to Germany to fight for the Elector Palatine against the Catholics.
I can't see Oliver Cromwell, the Lord's soldier, as a Protestant mercenary.
I can't see him at all, Henry. That's the trouble.
Hold there, sir, and identify yourself.
Captain Reynolds, Cromwell's horse. Am I late? I've just ridden in from London.
The meeting started 5 minutes ago, sir. Fairfax is speaking.
You must let me in.
Quietly then, sir.
I call you here to this meeting under the eyes of God and his great church of Bury St. Edmunds, leaving my bed of sickness earlier than I should. Because of my great love for the army and the cause we are all engaged for, and because of my greater fear that all we have fought for over so many years may be lost. We have our differences, man for man, but only by working in loving brotherhood will we achieve anything. It was by unity that God gave us our great victories, and we are all experienced enough soldiers to know that anarchy leads only to defeat and disaster. So my first task, as I take up again the command that Parliament has given me, and with Major General Skipper at my side, is to reimpose discipline, the strict military discipline suitable for soldiers of the Lord, that has made us the famous army that we are. Amen. I must say first that I see here many faces of men I know and love who were not invited to this assembly. And I wonder why, not being officers, they have presented themselves at this council of war.
With respect, Lord General, they are here at the invitation of a council of agitators.
Who are you, sir, that you should speak without us?
Cornet Thompson, Graves Regiment, and I think I speak by the general will of this assembly. In your regretted absence, sir, many of our officers have left us, and many more no longer have the respect of their men, so that their commands are effectively ended. We wish nothing better than to see the discipline of this army re-established with your excellency at the head of it.
You go a strange way about it, sir, interrupting my speech and dismissing my remarks.
With respect, Lord General, there is only one matter before this assembly, and it is not to expel the Council of Agitators. Do that and you will effectively expel yourself, because the men will follow the council.
And who are you, sir?
Trooper Secretary Sir Cromwell's horse.
I find it strange, Trooper, that you should not only elbow your way into an officer's meeting, but should also take it upon yourself to dictate to it.
With respect, sir, I am the chairman of the Council of Agitators, and I speak not for myself, but with the backing of the men.
Let me tell you all, before any more expenditure of breath, that I am here to make known to you the latest and most generous offers of the Parliament. They have now passed an indemnity bill, and they've increased their offers of back pay for both horse and foot.
Too late, sir, all that. We wouldn't trust them with a baggage wagon, let alone the welfare of the army. We reject them and all their purposes. What we are for is the unity of the army, with yourself at its head. But to advance that noble aim, sir, we must do one thing. Make clear to everyone, you, sir, and Major General Skipper at your side, that we do not intend to be disbanded, and call the whole army together to a great rendezvous at Newmarket to make sure they can't break us up piecemeal, as they are now trying to do.
Mr. Sexby, I think you should now sit down. You've said enough.
Sexby speaks for all of us, Major General Skipham, the great majority of officers and men.
All those that haven't deserted their command. Because there are very many long Presbyterian faces that have made this house of God a lot more cheerful place by their absence.
What are we going to do, Tom? All our authority is gone.
Either re-establish it or go home.
If you wish to have a rowdy agitators meeting, you may do so. If, however, you wish to continue a council of war among rational and God-fearing men, I must ask you to be silent and not speak unless invited to. Mr. Sexby, you assert that you speak the general opinion of this meeting?
Yes, sir. And of the rank and file soldiers, who are even more important than the gentlemen sitting here when it comes to bearing the heat of the day.
No one doubts that.
But we can very easily put it to the test, sir. I propose that this army agrees not to disband and that we call a full rendezvous at Newmarket. Let that be put to a vote, sir.
Don't do it, Tom. It will be a humiliation.
We have no choice but to do it.
Let it be put to the vote, by all means. Let those against the proposition say no.
No!
No.
No.
Those in favour say aye!
No. Oh, James, we did it, we did it. Who commands the army now, eh?
We must persuade Fairfax to stay. Whatever happens, if we lose him, Cornet Joyce, are you ready to ride?
Within 2 hours. We have 500 picked men, picked to take on anyone.
Brother Jeff, I think Sexby had it all fixed that Joyce should lead our little expedition, don't you? Long before he brought it up before the council.
I know he did, but why not? Joyce is a good man.
Oh, and Sexby has the mentality of an emperor, not of a tribune.
George, you must ride to London first.
What?
We must have Cromwell with us whatever happens. So tell him yourself in the strictest confidence.
What?
About the king? Mm-hmm. Supposing he's against it. You put in a clear enough light, he won't be. Send your men straight to Oxford to secure the guns.
That's already fixed. James Thompson is in command.
And join them as soon as you've seen Cromwell.
Well, Colonel Jackson, Major Gooday, you might just as well have ridden to Chelmsford for all the use you wear here.
You're heavily outvoted, so it seemed wiser to keep quiet.
82 voted for Sexby's motion, Tom. 4 against.
With your permission, Lord General, we will ride for Chelmsford at once.
Take my permission and welcome, Colonel Jackson, for all the good it will do. What do you intend to accomplish when you get there?
I shall carry out the Parliament's instructions, Lord General.
A week ago, I would have praised your determination. But what use is the right action at the wrong time?
Lord General.
Good morning, Colonel Harley. You, I noticed, were one of the faithful corps.
Lord General, I am returning to London at once. As a member of Parliament, I can no longer remain here.
Yes, I understand.
I strongly advise you to come with me, sir. You can do nothing here among this crew of rebels. Come back to London and resign your command.
What will you do, Philip?
I'm too old a soldier to serve in an army where the cornets and troopers give the orders. I shall ride home.
Come with us, Lord General. There are other men in London, other armies, if need be. Leave these madmen to their own devices.
Excuse me, gentlemen. My place is with this army or none.
You'll be quite on your own, sir. All the honest men are leaving or have left already.
An honest man is always on his own, sir. Captain Reynolds.
Sir?
I imagine you're riding to London.
At once, sir.
To Cromwell's house.
Yes, sir.
Don't ride without a letter from me.
Francis, the scout reports that we're about 3 miles south of Finchingfield.
We'll bivouac there for the night. Lewis, you can tell the men it's hedges and ditches this evening. No creek water for anyone. The weather's good enough and it'll keep the villagers friendly.
Very well, Captain.
Hedges and ditches tonight, lads! No creek water!
Colonel Jackson! I found the regiment! They've halted in some fields just south of Finchingfield, and they're getting ready to camp there.
Well, gentlemen, if you are ready to do your duty as commissioners of a parliament, I'll lead you into camp.
We were ready last night at Chelmsford, Colonel, but the birds had flown.
May God go with us.
Lewis, keep the men in these two fields.
private yeoman. Tell the men to watch their fires. There's been no rain for nearly 2 weeks. Those hedges will go up like tinder.
Aye, aye, sir.
Francis, what? We have visitors.
Jackson and Musket with them. And those other two gentlemen, no doubt, are the parliamentary commissioners.
Captain White, tell the drummer to beat assembly. I want to speak to the men.
Look out, boys. Here are our enemies.
Get them out of there. We don't want them.
Did you hear me, Captain White?
We have taken the colours, Colonel, and are marching to Newmarket as ordered by the Council of Agitators.
You are doing no such thing. I have here with me the Commissioners of Parliament, and in my hand, the House's order. Command me.
Come you come away with your truck, the 80 pamphlet and us. Hang it back. Come to one dead ass. We're going to run them off like vultures.
Captain White. I order you...
Your order no longer runs here, sir. I suggest you leave us to our preparations before the men get any angrier than they are.
Chase them out of the camp.
I think we'd better leave, Colonel. It's not consonant with the dignity of Parliament.
Get out, you whited sabotage!
Any longer, sir, we shall be in danger.
I know that, Major.
Go on, drummer! Stop them out of the camp!
Gentlemen, we must go. Where to? Back to Chelmsford.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The army has failed you.
Never mind that. Let's get out of here.
And where tomorrow? London. And then home. My soldiering days are done.
Francis.
What?
Here's the scout galloping back in a hurry.
There can't be anyone to stop us. It's not out here.
Who knows? We're quite out of touch. Anything could be happening.
Captain White, sir.
What's the trouble?
No trouble, sir. There's a gentleman waiting just off the road about half a mile ahead. Said he wants to speak to you.
Gentleman, who is he?
And how does he know you're here?
He won't say, sir. There's a lady with him, well cloaked and hooded, so you can hardly see her. They're both well mounted.
Now be careful, Francis. May have been ambushed more innocently than that.
What's the man look like?
Grey, solid sort of chap, sir. Don't look like a soldier.
Yes, I think I know who it might be. Show me where they are.
Take care, Francis.
Stay with the column, Lewis. I won't be a moment.
There they are, sir. On that track, about 50 yards from the road, under the elm tree.
Yes, I can see them.
Shall I ride with you, sir?
No, stay here. Mun, I guessed it might be you.
Hello, Francis.
Penelope, what are you doing here?
Well, we heard about the regiment being at Chelmsford, and if you were on the march to Newmarket, we got wind of you at Finchingfield last night, and being so near, we thought we had a good chance of seeing you.
What for? What's it all about?
Come on, Pen. I've found him for you. Now it's up to you.
Thanks, Mun. Hello, Francis.
Pen, what's happening? Have you been crying?
Sorry. I had to see you somehow.
Are you in trouble?
Yes, with Father.
What?
He plans to move to London and to take me with him next week.
He'll never leave Nunstow. He was born there.
He means it. He's already packing. We'll need a wagon at least for his books.
Why? What's it all about?
Oh, it's because of me. Francis, he's taking me to London to keep me away from Captain Reynolds and to get me married off.
That's not very wise. Jack's more often in London than anywhere.
I must see him, Francis, somehow. I really don't know where I am, and Father's quite determined. I know him in this mood.
Neither do I.
If Captain Reynolds wants me to marry him, he must claim me or do something about it. Or Father will have me meeting every unmarried fool in London.
I've no idea where Jack is. I've been out of touch with headquarters for several days now. And Jack's more often at Cromwell's house in Drury Lane than anywhere else these days. But I'll see him in a few days. I'm sure he's very likely to be at Newmarket.
I'm sorry, Francis, to be so much trouble. I don't want to be married off to the first bachelor Father can get his hands on just because he doesn't like Captain Reynolds.
So you do, I can see.
Yes, I do, Francis, I do.
Don't worry, Pen. I'll get word to John somehow. And he's as determined as you, I promise you.
Thank you, Francis. Oh, look. Here comes your regiment. Mum, look. Don't they look splendid?
Tired and dirty, to be truthful, but they're terrific fellows.
See the blue flashes and pennons. Fairfax flew.
That's right.
Where are the officers? I can only see Captain Audley.
There are none. I'm in command.
What? How can you do?
I can't tell you now. Everything's been turned upside down. But it'll all become clear in a few days. Don't worry. I'll do the best I can about John. And I'll try and keep in touch. My regards to Father.
Mum? How can Francis be in command?
Well, I know nothing about soldiering. But I hope he knows what he's doing. Come on, we must ride back before Father notices we've gone.
It is one of the pleasures of London, Mrs. Cromwell, that in a gentleman's garden you might be in the country, even in the middle of Drury Lane.
We have a whole choir of birds here, son Henry, at all seasons. They like the big tree. Oh, Betty, bring your brother-in-law the cordial. Mother?
Thank you, ma'am. It's not often we have the pleasure of taking our ease in a garden on a hot summer's afternoon.
Oh, I don't know about taking our ease, Commissary. There's been so much coming and going of soldiers this last few days. I feel like an innkeeper's wife more than the mistress of a gentleman's house.
You're cordial, sir. Oh,
thank you, Miss Elizabeth. Your sister sends all kinds of messages of love.
Oh, how is our Bridget, brother? We miss her terribly here.
Happy as a soldier's wife can ever be. I miss her, too.
You see? Son Commissary Fleetwood's here, and Wally, and half a dozen other officers I hardly know, including two just ridden in from Bury.
Who are they?
A young Reynolds is one of them. The other I don't know.
Excuse me, ma'am. I must speak to the young man and take him to your husband.
Where is he? I seem to have lost him.
Over there, ma'am, talking to Fleetwood and Wally.
Ah.
They are citizens because they feel themselves to be citizens. Something will have to be done.
I don't know, Edward. I still don't know.
Oliver, if you'd been at that officers' meeting, you'd know. There's great power and anger let loose in that army, and it must be controlled.
I can do nothing. How can I when I no longer have a command?
You have a command if you want it.
The same one you've always had, even higher if Fairfax decides to step down.
No, no. They have me trussed hand and foot by my own self-denying ordinance. I proposed it in the House and got it passed. That no MP should hold military command.
To clear our enemies from the army, that's all. And within a few weeks you became Lieutenant General.
Not to mention Harley and Rossiter and all the other MPs who are colonels.
Only because I had to, because there was no one else to command the horse and the decisive battle was imminent. Now they're quite right to remove me.
If you ride back to the army, you will be in command, whatever Parliament says.
Yes, and what hypocrisy will they accuse me of if I do? I have told them in the House week after week that the army will disband if ordered to. Now the army has refused. How can I, as a member of the House, own their actions? Much as I might wish to. Much as I might sympathize with the soldiers and despise those corrupt vessels of iniquity who sit at Westminster Hall, knowing as I do some of the secret places of their hearts. Can I say one thing one day and another the next and still presume any pretense of honesty?
You know I am an old friend, Oliver, perhaps your oldest in the army. I was there on that first day in Cambridge when you raised your regiment.
Edward, you need not remind me of your loyalty.
When the situation changes, the wise man changes with it. This army is like a great wave breaking. A man must either swim with it or be knocked over and very likely drowned. And as for the Parliament, they have betrayed you often enough.
But the cause, Edward, the cause is the Parliament. Are we the men to turn against it after all these years?
Oliver, Captain Reynolds is here from Bury.
I have letters for you, sir, from the Lord General.
Let me see them.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
Gentlemen, you know Captain Reynolds, I believe. Colonel Wally, Colonel Fleetwood.
Know him, Henry? I should think so. We rode together in the old Ironside for 2 years, didn't we, Jack? And we beat you down from Bury by a good 2 hours.
I'm very glad to see you again, sir, and you, Colonel Fleetwood. And let me remind you, Colonel, I waited exactly 2 hours for the Lord General's letter.
I've heard much about your courage, Captain, and your usefulness, too.
What does Fairfax say?
But you've already told me that the army won't disband.
And?
That he has decided to stay with them for the moment, at least. And will be glad to see me at Bury.
He said something like it before we left, but he was unsure.
Fairfax is never sure, but he is a man of unimpeachable moral uprightness. If he thinks it right to stay, he will stay. Thank you, Captain Reynolds.
Sir, I must have a moment with you in private.
Of course. Walk with me over there by the plane tree. Excuse me, gentlemen.
Private messages from Fairfax?
Who knows? Fairfax isn't the only general in Bury at the moment.
What is it?
Call it Joyce rode down with me, sir. He must most urgently see you.
I saw him coming with you. I suppose you rode together for safety.
No, sir.
What does he want?
I don't know, sir.
You don't know?
It seems to be the most closely guarded secret.
George. George Joyce. Come over here.
Good afternoon, Lieutenant General.
You have something to say to me, Cornish?
For your ears only, sir.
Leave us, John.
Sir.
What is it? I've been sent on an urgent and dangerous command, and it was thought proper that you should know of it.
Sent by whom? Fairfax?
No, sir. He knows nothing of it.
Well, then who? He is your commander.
By the Council of Agitators, sir.
The Council? Are you wise to tell me this, Cornet?
We think you are our friend, sir. And we think the nation is in such great danger, our action is justified.
What have you been ordered to do?
I have 700 men with me, sir. 200 have been sent to Oxford to reinforce the artillery train and bring it to Newmarket.
Is that all?
No, sir, there's more.
What?
We are to ride to Holdenby to guard the king.
The king is guarded already.
By Colonel Graves, sir. And we don't trust him an inch. I am to dismiss him and take his place.
Dear heavens! A cornet is to dismiss a colonel without any orders except from a gang of ruffians.
With respect, sir, we are the elected representatives of the soldiers. If the Parliament gets hold of the king and puts him at the head of a new army, Scots or Londoners or whatever, it could be blood again within a week. We have seen enough blood. If we can prevent it simply by changing the king's guard, we are all prepared to do it, sir. Orders or no orders. We will do it, whether you approve or not.
I know nothing of this cornet, Joyce, you understand. Nothing.
No, sir. But we felt you ought to know.
You are quite right. There is good sense in what you say, and I see the hand of the Lord in it, too. As plain as this hand in front of my face. There are madmen in the house who will stop at nothing, even another civil war, to get what they want.
Yes, sir. That's our feeling, too.
Keep me informed, and God go with you.
Thank you, sir.
But I know nothing of it. You understand? Nor do I approve in any way of your action, nor will I justify it. Any consequences you must take on your own heads.
Yes, sir. I understand.
Ride fast, Cornet. Act with decision and pray reverently for God's guidance.
You may be sure of that, sir.
Who is that young officer?
George Joyce is one of the old Ironsides. Ah. Been with us since the beginning.
Cromwell's in long conversation with him. Mm. It must be bad news.
Mrs. Cromwell!
What do you want, sir? All the other soldiers are in the garden.
Major Tilden, ma'am, at your service. I must see the Lieutenant General.
What's through there? In the garden?
You'd better ride now, Cornet Joyce. Keep me informed if you can.
Lieutenant General!
I will, sir. Whenever possible.
I must interrupt you, sir. It's most urgent.
You're not interrupting, Major. What is it?
Parliament has issued orders for your arrest.
What?
You must leave this evening.
Who told you that?
I dare not say, sir. I'm sworn to secrecy, but the message is from inside the house and close to Hollis. You still have friends in that chamber.
Are you quite sure?
Quite certain, sir. You must ride at once, or you'll be in prison before tonight.
Edward! Thomas, come over here. What is it?
I'm leaving for Bury at once, within the hour.
What?
I am, apparently, about to be arrested.
Arrested?
Obviously, they've heard what has happened at Bury, and they think I'm behind it.
I'll ride with you.
Are you quite sure?
No, Thomas, I'm not. But I don't intend to wait here to find out.
I can hardly believe it. Such ingratitude, such small men.
Well, it's decided now. He's crossed the Rubicon at last.
Or been shoved across.
Elizabeth, listen. Get the servants together. Send Harry to hire two wagons at once. And leave for Huntington tomorrow.
But Oliver...
Now don't question me, Elizabeth. Simply do what I say. I want the house cleared. Now, how much money do we have?
Well, I have some, but it's mostly in your private cabinet.
I'll take as much as I can with me. Leave nothing here. Not as much as a shilling. Not a stick of furniture or a piece of plate. And especially my private music. Now get it all loaded in the wagons and get off to Huntingdon with the girls as soon as you can and with as much secrecy as you can manage.
Well, now, how can I clear the house in secret? What's happened?
I'm not sure, except that we're all in great danger. Now, I shall ride off almost at once and see you in Huntingdon as soon as I can. Or send a message to you there. Now, God be with you, my love. And you, my dear girls. Only he knows when we shall meet again.
Dear Bet, I thought these days were over. Yet here I am again, galloping with 500 of my mates towards a meeting that may end in blood. We left Oxford and the Gunners yesterday and rode hard so that now we're within a few miles of Holdenby.
Cornet Joyce! What is it, Cornet Thompson?
The outer guard of Holdenby House is about 500 yards ahead.
We'll canter till he sees us, then slow to a walk.
Canter!
Stand there and identify yourselves!
We are the new guard sent by the army to replace you. We ask you to send for Colonel Graves at once.
Graves kept us waiting for nearly an hour, watching from the windows of Holmby House, no doubt. While our horses took a breather, and we sat there wondering if we would have to fight our way in. Then eventually Graves rode out with Major Scroop to meet us.
Who are you, sir? Cornet Joyce, Colonel, of Cromwell's Horse, with 500 men.
Cornet, have you no more senior officer in command?
I am ordered by the army to replace you and your men in guarding the king.
By whose order?
The Council of Agitators.
I recognize no such order. I hold the Parliament's commission.
Don't argue, Colonel. We will fight you if we must. Our pistols are primed, and we mean what we say.
Do you threaten me, sir?
10 troopers! Shoot those rooks out of that tree! Are you satisfied, sir?
He took one look at the tree and the pile of black feathers on the road, then stood aside and let us ride past. It turns out he only had about 80 men left, most of the rest having deserted to Newmarket. Next morning, he rode off to London, taking a good many of them with him, shouting insults at us and promising to be back. But Major Scroop, who's a good Anabaptist at heart, stayed with us.
This is a great day, John. Is all your regiment here?
In very good order. Your fellows look very smart for foot.
Where would you be without us? Chasing all over the countryside like madmen. You see Cromwell and Fairfax yet?
You see over there by Fairfax's horse is a tent been set up. They're there with the rest of the High Command, what's left of it.
Dear Penelope, I wish you could have seen this great sight. The whole army assembled on June the 4th at Kinfordheath near Newmarket. 7 regiments of foot, 6 of horse, 14,000 men in all, in the very best order. The sun shone down on us, and it would be a daring man who would assert that any army in the world could stand against us.
Why such a grim face, Tom? This is a good day for the Lord's people.
The news from London isn't good. Parliament met yesterday and voted £10,000 to raise a new militia. Thousands of discharged soldiers from both sides are banging on the doors of the House to enlist. And here we are leading a band of rebels in a mutiny.
But we are united again. There's a structure of command. The men obey their orders. That means that anything is possible.
Hardly a structure of command when so many officers have left.
Well, that can be mended. What have we done, Tom, but broken off the dead branches? We're all honest men now. The tree is sound and wholesome. We shall be united. We shall do the Lord's business. And who will dare to stand?
Are your wife and family safe?
Secured in Huntingdon. There is no trouble.
Were you really about to be arrested?
I shall never know the answer to that.
Well, I needed you here, that's certain.
But I see the hand of God in it. After many months of darkness, I begin to see some light.
Shall we move out, gentlemen? The regiments are all in position.
Yes, by all means. Come on, Tom. Let us go and sign our names. And let us do it in good heart.
Certainly. Are we all ready, gentlemen?
And there they were, Cromwell and Fairfax. And Worley, Ireton, Fleetwood and Pride, all the independent leaders, with not a Presbyterian to be seen from one end of the field to another, except Black Tom himself, and he's with us however he says his prayers. We all prayed together and sang a psalm. And then Cromwell and Fairfax publicly signed the army's solemn engagement, pledging that they would not allow the army to be disbanded or divided, and that in all future councils of the army, the agitators will sit on equal terms with the officers. I have never seen such cheering and joy. It was like long-lost brothers whom time and the world have separated, meeting and embracing with renewed love. There's no knowing when we'll be able to leave here now the army's gathered in one place. But I enclose with my letter John's note for you, knowing that his love is not a whit less than mine and perhaps even greater. Your loving brother, Francis White, Captain.
Colonel Joyce.
Who's there?
William Thompson.
And James.
Don't be so jumpy, George. We're friends.
What are you doing out here so late?
Making my rounds with the guards. And it's a hot night. Stuffy in the house. It's cool walking in the grounds.
I'm thinking.
Yes?
We've been thinking too. Both of us.
What?
There are 500 of us here. But Grive could be on his way back with a regiment by now.
Or the Scots. With a whole army.
And we've been on the wiser. I've been thinking the same. If they get hold of the king...
We'll all be hanged. And for nothing.
It would mean another war. All our thoughts have been concentrated on getting here, making the king safe. We've none of us thought what we'd do when we'd got him, or how naked we'd be. So, I've been thinking.
What?
That we should take him to Newmarket to the army. He'd be safe there, and so would we.
We were saying the same not 10 minutes ago.
Otherwise, we just sit here like ducks, waiting for the Fowler to come and get us. We have no orders from Parliament, or anyone with legal authority. We've committed treason if you look at it in that light. If we wait here long enough, someone's sure to come after us.
Call up Church. We'll do it now.
What, today?
We'll ride at first light. I'll go and fetch him. And I'll write a letter to our friend in Drury Lane. Just to cover ourselves.
Mm. And will our friend look after us, do you think?
I don't know. But there's no time to worry about it now.
And that's how we came to be lined up on the lawn of Holmby House at first dawn, all 500 of us ready to ride, and waiting for the king to come down from breakfast.
Are you in command?
Yes, Your Majesty. Cornet Joyce, at your service.
Thank you, Cornet. You're not much older than a boy. How old are you?
I'm 23, sir. I look younger than I am.
Where is your commission to move me from here?
My commission stands behind me, sir. 500 strong.
As authoritative a commission, Cornet, as I have ever seen. I resign myself to your excellent protection.
So we rode away with him in that cold dawn towards Newmarket. Without orders, following nothing but our own instinct for survival. Not for the first time since these wars started, and probably not for the last time either. In Insurrection, Part 3 of God's Revolution by Don Taylor, Cromwell was played by Bernard Hepton, Fairfax by Nigel Anthony, Francis White by Graham Blockie, and John Church by Eric Allen. Cornet Joyce was Jonathan Nibbs, Ireton, Bill Wallace, Charles I, William Edel, Colonel Woolley and Sexby, John Hartock, and Lockyer and Major General Skippon were Peter Craves. William Thompson was Anthony Jackson, James Thompson, Simon Cuff, Stephen White, David March, Penelope, Deborah Makepeace, and Edmund, Cornelius Garrett. Mrs. Cromwell was June Barry, Betty, Zela Clark, and Reynolds, Kim Wall. God's Revolution, Part 3, was directed in Bristol by Ronald Mason.